Sita slipped out of his jacket and offered it back to him. "Thank you." "May I see you again?" he asked. "Can you come to dinner with me tomorrow?" With a small, troubled shake of her head, "I don't think that would be wise." And she turned and headed back for the party, leaving Dan on the veranda alone. He got into the jacket again, then stared out at the unending rain for long minutes. "She doesn't think that would be wise, does she?" "She's probably right." Then he laughed and said aloud, "But what the hell does wisdom have to do with it?" Chapter 7. Feeling somewhat like an ancient Christian martyr marching into the arena to face a lion, Maria de la Luz Hernandez left the puzzled American and walked back into her father's house. As she approached the noise and smoke of the party, however, a tiny smile glimmered on her lips. Daniel Hamilton Randolph. All the romantic rumors she had heard about the Yankee billionaire had been true. He was a real devil of a man, the kind who could easily sweep a woman off her feet. Just introduced, and already he took me in his arms and kissed me. She marveled at the thrill of it. It had taken all of her willpower to break free. A dangerous man. Her heart pulsed wildly at the thought of him. Her lips burned with the memory of his kiss. There was no one she could tell about this moment, no one she could turn to for advice. As she had virtually every day for all these years, Lucita wished that her mother were alive to hold her close and counsel her. She shut her eyes and saw it all again. Her mother's beautiful face, set in a determined frown of concentration, as she drove the Mercedes through the worsening rainstorm. The leaves and branches littering the wet, puddled road as the wind howled and tore at the trees, bending them over so far that Lucita was terrified they would reach into the car and seize her. The truck stalled on the muddy curve, their car screeching as it spun over the shoulder of the road and into the rain-filled ditch. Blackness, cold and black. Lucita remembered how wet and chilling it felt in the ditch, with water seeping in through the shattered window and crumpled door on her mother's side. It was the cold and wet that revived her as she hung in the straps of a child's safety harness. Her mother lay sprawled across the seat beside her, head tilted back, mouth open, eyes staring sightlessly at the car's roof. At first, Lucita thought that her father was angry with her, as if he blamed his daughter for his wife's death. Gradually, she realized that it was grief that made him so distant, so unreachable, and guilt. As she grew older, Lucita learned that her mother had been hurrying to get to their seaside villa in time to greet the guests due to arrive for one of her husband's political dinners. Slowly, gradually, with the unconscious instinct of a child, she won her father back to her, made him realize that she loved him and needed his protection, and the assurance that he loved her and did not blame her for the tragedy that had bereaved them both. They grew closer, consoling each other, helping each other to ease the pain without forgetting their loss, to face the future together, happy to have each other. Lucita was 13 when she realized that her father was a sexually active male. Suddenly she saw him as an attractive, vigorous man in the prime of his life, and she was terrified of the strange new feelings that surged through her. He must have known or felt similar feelings of his own, because he suddenly decided to send his only child off to a convent school far from Caracas. She went willingly, leaving her home, her father, and all that was familiar to her for the discipline and austerity of gray stone walls and severe nuns who prayed, spoke, and even scolded in whispers. But her visits home were triumphs of pampering. Her father, as if to prove that he could love her as a father should, treated her to parties and dinners and dances in her honor. Nothing she asked for was denied her. Lucita lived a schizophrenic life. Ascetic discipline among the nuns, and a vibrant social whirl with her father. By the time she left the convent to return home and begin thinking about attending a university, she knew that her father was having affairs with women. She accepted this, telling herself that no matter what Holy Mother Church instructed, a man of her father's virility could not be expected to live as a celibate. Nor did she. Lucita quickly found, once she returned to Caracas, that the young men, and some older ones as well, found her powerfully attractive. She surrendered her virginity to a bold young Brazilian army officer who was serving at his nation's embassy. He returned home a few weeks afterward, and she never saw him again, nor cared. Now her father thought of her as a valuable possession, a piece of property that could be traded off in marriage to his advantage. Where once she had been frightened that she loved her father too much, now she found nothing in her heart for him but contempt. She would meet this Russian, this powerful foreigner whom her father wanted for a son-in-law. Yes, she would meet him and spit in his face. She returned to the party, sipped champagne, and spoke demurely to her father's guests, laughed at their insipid jokes, and nodded when she was supposed to. It seemed like hours that she stood there, bored, angry, wishing that they would all go away and leave her in peace. The younger men gathered around her, as they usually did, but she did not enjoy being the center of their attention. She danced with a few of them, but always returned to the drawing room, where the Russian and her father held court in separate corners of the room, both of them paying her no attention whatever. She thought about the Yankee, Dan Randolph, again. He was a bold rascal, just as Mrs. Andrews had said. Not pretty, not even handsome, really. But the devil twinkled in his eyes. How old is he? Lucita wondered. His light brown hair showed no trace of gray, although an American billionaire would not be above dyeing his hair, or even wearing a toupee, if he were balding. But she did not believe Dan Randolph would do so. He did not seem to be vain about his looks. He was younger than her father, of that much she was certain. It will be easy enough to find his biography and read it. End of side one. To continue, turn the cassette over. Side 2, Privateers, by Ben Bova. Continuing on page 56. Lucita, there you are! Her father's strong, deep voice broke her out of her reverie. The men clustering about her melted back as Rafael Hernandez approached. The Russian was at his side. Lucita, I have the great honor of introducing Comrade Vasily Malik, Chairman of the Council of Outer Space Activities of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Turning slightly, Hernandez continued, Comrade Malik, my daughter, Maria de la Luz Hernandez. The Russian had a good face, Lucita had to admit to herself. Broad, strong cheekbones, clear blue eyes, a boyish smile, hair the golden color of ripening grain. He took Lucita's proffered hand and touched his lips to it. I am delighted to meet you, Señorita Hernandez. Lucita smiled back at him. It is an honor to meet you, Señor. I have been told that you are the most beautiful woman in Caracas, said Malik, still holding her hand. That was an understatement. Trying to sound unimpressed, Lucita replied, You flatter me. Not at all, he insisted. Would you care to dance? Before Lucita could reply, Malik turned to her father. With your permission? Of course, Hernandez beamed. Of course. The Russian monopolized her for the rest of the evening. None of the other men dared to interfere. Lucita danced with him and listened to his talk. She noted that he drank sparingly, unlike other Russians she had met, who swilled vodka until they were stupefied and falling down. To her surprise, his talk was interesting. Fascinating. You've never been in space. What a shame. You must come to the Soviet Union and take a ride on one of our space shuttles. I can arrange for you to spend a week or more aboard a Soviet space facility. Properly chaperoned, of course. He laughed. We Russians have a strong sense of propriety. We're downright prudish, in fact, officially. And unofficially? Lucita asked, accepting the bait. Malik made the corners of his mouth turn down. I'm afraid there is nothing in the entire Soviet Union that is unofficial. Whatever is not specifically authorized by a law or a regulation is absolutely forbidden. Despite herself, she found it impossible to dislike this Russian, until she asked, Is it true that your mines on the moon are run with slave labor? For just the tiniest flash of a second, Malik's face hardened. He made himself smile almost instantly, but Lucita recognized the steel beneath the velvet. They are prisoners, yes, but hardly slaves. They are Soviet citizens who have